Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Pete Musto.
British clothing design school graduate Phoebe St. Leger's dream of working for a major fashion company has been delayed for now. Like many other students around the world who completed their higher education in 2020, the coronavirus health crisis is creating problems for her future career path. The coronavirus forced the cancellation of St. Leger's final year fashion show, which is usually part of her university's graduation ceremonies. This removed the chance for her to show her knitwear clothing collection to people in the industry, some of whom might have liked her work enough to offer her a job. Instead, the 23-year-old returned to her family home in Winchester, Southern England, and presented her classwork online. She has applied for about 40 jobs, but has not received any offers. "All the jobs have all dried up everywhere," St. Leger told the Associated Press. She knows graduates from past years who have been dismissed from their jobs or are temporarily out of work, so now she is prepared to seek a job outside of her industry. One possibility would be in food service. "It's still hard to be hopeful when you're not seeing anyone doing well at the moment," she said. Young people everywhere, armed with new degrees and professional qualifications, are struggling to enter the workforce as the health crisis pushes the world's economy into recession. COVID-19 has limited the hopes of graduates getting their first jobs, an important step in building new careers. Many employers have had to reduce efforts to employ recent graduates or even withdraw job offers. The latest unemployment numbers in the United States demonstrate this difficult situation. Government data shows that while 1.8 million jobs were added in July, this marked a sharp slowdown in employment growth from the month before. This means the world's biggest economy has regained just 42% of jobs lost to the coronavirus. U.S. careers website Glassdoor says the number of jobs advertised as entry-level or new grad was down 68% in May from a year ago. In Britain, the Institute of Student Employers contacted 179 businesses and found they planned to cut student employment by 23% this year. "The wave of delayed employment will spread through the economy," says Brian Kropp. He is the chief of human resources research at industry advisory company Gartner. "Many graduates will have student loan debts they will not be able to start paying off until they find a job," he said. "If you can't get an entry-level job today, that means you don't move out of your parents' house. You don't develop real work experience. You don't buy your first home until later. And you don't get married until later, Kropp said. One important long-term effect for young graduates who take longer to find good first jobs is lower pay throughout their careers, experts say. Someone who takes a year or more to find their first job is likely to fall behind when it comes to promotions and must also compete with younger people who enter the job market later. The problem, like the health crisis, is worldwide. Job advertisement search engine Adzuna reports that in 10 countries, unfilled positions seeking graduates for July are down from the year before. Britain, India, and the Netherlands have seen the biggest decreases, with advertisements down by more than half from a year ago. But other countries, including Austria, Australia, Brazil, and France, are also seeing major decreases. Maria Jose Casco, a newly qualified doctor, has not found work after graduating in Ecuador in April. The 24-year-old graduate said she's been searching for health-related jobs as well as work in other industries. Even though the health crisis created a need for more health services, she found that employers are not offering full-time jobs. They're looking for temporary staff they can easily fire, Casco said. She and her husband are living off savings and his $480 monthly earnings, and, like others, are considering moving to a different country. The coronavirus crisis is adding to existing problems for young people in countries facing continuing economic difficulties. Emmanuel Reyai graduated from Zimbabwe's Midlands State University 2 years ago. But the 24-year-old is no closer to his goal of getting a job related to his degree in local governance. His search is limited by both the African country's economic collapse and the spread of the coronavirus. I have applied more than 40 times. Nothing, he said. For some, however, there are happy endings. In China, 23-year-old Li Jin graduated this summer with a statistics degree, but had been looking for a job since January. Some classmates found banking jobs thanks to their connections. Others without ties ended up in industries unrelated to their degrees. Several are doing tutoring jobs, and Li found one herself, but it lasted just a week. She felt hopeless, but also recognized that everyone has it hard. I'd sit in the subway, seeing the people come and go around me, and I'd suddenly feel that it wasn't easy for anyone, Li said. Eventually, she found a job in data research in her hometown near Beijing that started this month. But more than half of her class have yet to be so lucky. I'm Pete Musto.
Now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Eggs. People all around the world eat eggs. You can cook them in many different ways. My favorite way to eat eggs is sunny side up. You heat up a pan, add some oil or butter, and crack an egg into it. One side of the egg cooks until the white part becomes solid. The yellow part of the egg, the yolk, stays yellow. It looks like a happy sun on a plate. That is why we call it sunny side up. The adjective sunny is also used to describe people. A very happy person can be described as sunny. We often pair sunny with two other words, disposition and personality. Generally speaking, these are the ways that people behave. Let's listen to some examples using these common word pairs. My coworker Pete is known for his sunny personality. Anyone who meets him likes him. He has a really sunny disposition and is always smiling. Pete always seems in a good mood.
Hi, Anna. Isn't it a beautiful day?
Sure is, Pete.
You have a great afternoon. See you later.
See ya, Pete. What a happy guy. We can also call a very happy person a ray of sunshine. In nature, a ray of sunshine is the light from the sun. It cuts through clouds and darkness to brighten the day. People who are rays of sunshine do the same. They lift your spirits or make you feel happy. They bring joy into the lives of others. But sometimes we use this expression in a sarcastic way. In other words, I might call someone a ray of sunshine if they are acting unhappy or even angry. Let's say my friend is in a bad mood. There is nothing especially wrong, but nothing seems to make her happy. I could say to her, "Well, aren't you a ray of sunshine today?" Now, just so you know, this comment probably would make her even less happy. Sarcasm can easily make people angry. So if people are mad or sad for a good reason, it may not be a good idea to say something sarcastic like this. Of course, no one is happy all the time. But some people are able to think about the good things in life more than the bad. In other words, they choose to look on the sunny side of life. On other programs, we have talked about this kind of person. People who see the good in nearly every situation are optimistic. They are hopeful. They see the glass as half full, not half empty. The next time you run into a bump in the road, which is another way to say a little problem, try your best to see the sunny side. And that's all the time we have. Join us again next week for another Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Let
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Today on The Making of a Nation, we tell about the European settlers who established colonies in the American Northeast in the 1600s. Here is Steve Ember.
The Puritans were one of the largest groups from England to settle in the area known as Massachusetts. They began arriving in 1630. The Puritans had formed the Massachusetts Bay Company in England. The king had given the company an area of land between the Charles and Merrimack rivers. The Puritans were Protestant Christians who had split from the Anglican Church. They wanted to change the church to make it more holy, more pure in their eyes. The Puritans were able to live as they wanted in Massachusetts. Soon, they became that area's largest religious group. By 1690, 50,000 people were living in Massachusetts. Puritans thought their faith was the only true religion, and that everyone should believe in it. They also believed that church leaders should lead the local government, and that all people in the colony should pay to support the Puritan church. The Puritans thought it was the job of government leaders to tell people what to believe. But some people disagreed with the Puritans, who became leaders of the colony. One of those who disagreed was a Puritan minister named Roger Williams. Roger Williams believed, as all Puritans did, that other European religions were wrong. He thought the spiritual traditions of the Native Americans were wrong too, but he did not believe in trying to force others to agree with him. He thought that it was a sin to punish or kill anyone in the name of Christianity, and he thought that only members of the church should have to pay to support the church. Roger Williams began speaking and writing about his ideas. He wrote a book arguing that it was wrong to punish people for having different beliefs. Then he declared that the European settlers were stealing land that belonged to the Indians. He said the King of England had no right to let people settle on land that was not his. The Puritan leaders of the Massachusetts Bay Colony forced Roger Williams to leave the colony in 1636. He traveled south. He bought land from local Indians and started a city, Providence. The English Parliament gave him permission to establish a new colony, Rhode Island, with Providence as its capital. As a colony, Rhode Island accepted people of all religious beliefs, including Catholics, Quakers, Jews, and even people who did not believe in God. Roger Williams also believed that governments should have no connection to a church. This idea of separating church and state was new. Later, it would become one of the most important of all the governing principles of American democracy. Other colonies were started by people who left Massachusetts to seek land. One of those colonies was Connecticut. A group led by a Puritan minister named Thomas Hooker left Boston in 1636. They moved inland and settled near the Connecticut River. Others soon joined them. Other groups from Massachusetts traveled north to find new homes. The King of England had given two friends a large piece of land in the north. The friends divided it. John Mason took what became the colony of New Hampshire. Ferdinando Gorgas took the area that later became the state of Maine. Maine was never a colony. It remained a part of Massachusetts until the United States was established in 1776. The area that became New York State was settled by the Dutch. They called it New Netherland. Their home country, the Netherlands, was a great power with colonies all over the world. A business called the Dutch West India Company owned most of the colonies. The Dutch claimed American land because of explorations by Henry Hudson, an Englishman working for the Netherlands. The land the Dutch claimed was between the areas settled by the Puritans in the north and the Anglican tobacco farmers in the south. The Dutch were not interested in settling the territory. Instead, they wanted to earn money. The Dutch West India Company built trading posts on the rivers claimed by the Netherlands. Indians brought animal skins to these posts for use in making goods for buyers back in Europe. In 1626, the Dutch West India Company bought two islands from the local Indians. The islands were Manhattan and Long Island. The Dutch paid for Manhattan with goods worth only about $24. The Dutch West India Company tried to find people to settle in America, but few Dutch wanted to leave Europe. So the colony welcomed people from other colonies and other countries. These people built a town on Manhattan Island. They called it New Amsterdam. It was soon full of people who had arrived on ships from faraway places. Up until this time, the population was mostly Dutch and British, but now one could hear as many as 18 different languages spoken in New Amsterdam. In 1655, the governor of New Netherland took control of a nearby Swedish colony on Delaware Bay. 9 years later, the English did the same to the Dutch. The English seized control of New Amsterdam and renamed it New York. That ended Dutch control of the territory that is now the states of New York, New Jersey, and Delaware. Most of the Dutch in New Amsterdam did not leave after it became New York. The English allowed everyone to stay. They let the Dutch have religious freedom. The Dutch were just not in control anymore. The Duke of York owned the area now. He was the brother of King Charles II of England. The king gave some of the land near New York to two of his friends. Sir George Carteret and Lord John Berkeley established a colony. They called it New Jersey after the English island where Carteret was born. The two men wrote a plan of government for their colony. It created an assembly that represented the settlers. It provided for freedom of religion. Men could vote in New Jersey, whatever their religion. Soon, people from all parts of Europe were living in New Jersey. Then King Charles took control of the area. He sent a royal governor to rule. But the colonists were still allowed to make their own laws through their elected assembly. The King of England did the same in each colony he controlled. He collected taxes from the people who lived there, but allowed them to govern themselves. One religious group that was not welcome in England was the Quakers. Quakers called themselves Friends. They believe that everyone has an inner light that leads them to God. Quakers believe they do not need a religious leader to tell them what is right, so they had no clergy. Quakers believe that all people are equal. The Quakers in England refused to recognize the king as more important than anyone else. They also refused to pay taxes to support the Anglican Church. Quakers believe that killing is always wrong, so they would not fight, even when they were forced to join the army. They also refused to promise their loyalty to a king, or a government, or a flag, only to God. For all these reasons, the English did not like the Quakers. Many Quakers wanted to leave England, but they were not welcome in most of the American colonies. One Quaker found a solution. His name was William Penn. William Penn was not born a Quaker. He became one as a young man. His father was an Anglican and a good friend of the king. King Charles borrowed money from William's father. When his father died, William Penn asked that the debt be paid with land in America. In 1681, the king gave William Penn land, which the king's council named Pennsylvania, meaning Penn's Woods in Latin. The Quakers now had their own colony. William Penn said the colony should be a place where everyone could live by Quaker ideas. That meant treating all people as equals and honoring all religions. It also meant that anyone could be elected as a leader. In most other colonies, people could believe in any religion, but they could not vote or hold office unless they were a member of the majority church. In Pennsylvania, all religions were equal.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.